How would you like to win the Essential Lutheran Library? Books like Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, Law and Gospel, the Lutheran Service Book, and the Lutheran Book of Prayer, and four more resources. All you have to do is share the Issues Etc. Reformation Week video on your Facebook page and send an email to contest@issuesetc.org. You'll find the video at issuesetc.org and click support. We'll announce the winner of the Essential Lutheran Library on Friday, October 28th.
Question. It's actually a question that the Supreme Court is discussing as we speak. Should religious institutions enjoy an exception from the law on particular issues of employment and discrimination because they are religious? It's usually called the ministerial exception, and the Supreme Court is thinking about that right now. A case before them is calling that in question. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon, the 6th of October. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery will be with us for the first half hour to get a legal perspective on the Supreme Court case concerning the ministerial exception. After that, Pastor Ken Jones of the White Horse Inn will be our guest. We'll get his thoughts on social activism and the Black Church. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States, distinguished research professor of philosophy and Christian thought at Patrick Henry College, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including his Tractatus Logico Theologicus. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
The case is called Hosanna Tabor versus EEOC. What's at stake for religious institutions in this case?
Well, this is a case where a called teacher at a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school was simply no longer able to function because of medical reasons and was asked to resign. She wouldn't resign, so her call was revoked. And then she took this case to court on the ground that she was not being treated properly as an employee under general employment law. And the result of this was that the lower court agreed with the congregation, but the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed and went along with the teacher, claiming that the ministerial exception shouldn't apply to her because she was really teaching almost no religious subjects. She was teaching non-religious stuff, and the case has now gone to the Supreme Court of the United States. It is a very important case because the Supreme Court has never ruled on the extent or application of the ministerial exception. The fact that clergy are supposed to be dealt with within their church bodies and the government is not supposed to interfere with their hiring or firing decisions. And there has been no case law on this, so it's somewhat difficult to predict with any certainty what the Supreme Court is going to rule. But it's extremely important because the case will either open the doors to government telling church bodies whom they can hire, whom they can fire, or it will cause the government to back off and not create problems like this for churches or church schools.
Why is there a ministerial exception?
Well, the reason for it is the First Amendment. The First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which, of course, applies to the states through the 14th Amendment, this prevents the establishment of religion in the United States, but guarantees the right of people to believe and practice as they wish. The reason for the First Amendment, the separation of church and state in the United States, was to keep the government from interfering with the life of churches. The colonists had been very disturbed by the excesses of the Anglican establishment, and they wanted to have a context in which it would be possible for churches to function without government interference. That was Madison's position. And it's interesting to contrast discussed this with France, where there is a similar separation of church and state, but there it was to keep the church from interfering with the state because the Roman Catholic Church was always sticking its nose into government. Here in the United States, we've been concerned to keep the government away from the churches so that the churches can do what they feel is right.
How would you summarize the case being made by the school and the church here in this Supreme Court case?
Well, the argument by the government is that this teacher was really not a minister, and that she was teaching mostly secular subjects. And for this reason, she was very much an employee like a gardener or whatever. And therefore, she should be protected by employment law and not be able to be fired as she was under these circumstances. And the government, therefore, is making a distinction between the ordained clergy and ordained teachers, saying in effect that an ordained teacher really doesn't mean anything unless that person is engaged solely or predominantly in religious instruction. Now, the contrasting argument, the argument presented by the church and school and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, since this was a school that had been part of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, it's no longer in existence, but this was within the framework of the Missouri Synod. The argument by the Synod is that, according to Lutheran polity, an ordained teacher is a minister, not a minister in the same sense as a pastor in terms of preaching and administering the sacraments, but engaged in a specific religious calling. And the amicus brief submitted by the Missouri Synod is just excellent and argues successfully that this kind of thing goes right back to the New Testament, where, for example, deacons were appointed to engage in a ministerial activity, but they were not on the same level as the apostles themselves, and that after all, this gal was in fact teaching religious subjects as well as her other subjects, even though the religious subjects were less in nature, and that the separation of church and state means that the government has got to pay attention to what the church's own polity and constitutional organization indicates, and in the case of the Missouri Synod, a teacher is very definitely regarded as an ordained person, and therefore only the church should deal with hiring and firing in relation to that person.
Now, there's also a question here of whether or not, and it's not a question for the Supreme Court to entertain, but one that may have been preliminary to all of this, whether or not churches can have their own means by which to settle such disputes. In the case of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, it's generally called the dispute resolution process. And with respect to members of Synod, that would be pastors and congregations, our Constitution is quite clear that that is the recourse, not the civil courts. Where does that play into this case of the teacher and the school there, Hosanna Tabor?
Well, if the teacher is regarded as a ministerial person by the church, it would seem to me by logical implication, the ministerial exception would indeed have to apply to that individual. And therefore, the church would determine the hiring and or firing of that individual. There has certainly been some confusion within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on this sort of thing, and the reason for that is that the Missouri Synod is against the ordination of women for the pastoral ministry, and therefore, when you have a ministerial calling which does embrace women, as the teaching calling does, that might seem to contradict the very idea of a teacher being a minister, but it doesn't seem to me that that should necessarily be the case. It's simply two different ways of defining minister, and in the amicus brief presented by Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, they have done an excellent job of showing that from Walther and the origins of the Missouri Synod right on to the present, women have been regarded as ministers in a sense equivalent to what this particular teacher was doing, and that has not taken away from the concept of the pastoral ministry. So it seems to me that if the court, if the Supreme Court goes through this amicus brief carefully and sees the history of the way in which teachers have been understood within the Missouri Synod, there is no question that this ought to be something that's determined within the church. Fascinatingly enough, an article appeared in USA Today on the October the 3rd on this subject, written by Thomas S. Kidd. Thomas S. Kidd spoke on our Patrick Henry campus just this last week because he's done a new and definitive book on Patrick Henry. He is a historian, and he has said about this case, and I think this is quite correct, and I will read from his article. "One cannot imagine a more obvious feature of an establishment of religion or a clearer violation of free exercise than the government dictating to a church that it must rehire a religious teacher, especially a person who has violated church teachings or behavioral codes. The Justice Department's position, if vindicated, raises the possibility that courts and bureaucrats may, in the name of contemporary norms of fairness, begin requiring religious organizations to hire any number of candidates who do not accept that faith's tenets. One could easily imagine future decisions forcing churches, synagogues, or mosques to hire employees who do not adhere to the tradition's norms of sexual behavior, for example." I think that Dr. Kidd is quite right in this. I think that the tremendous danger is that government, which always likes to stick its nose into things if it possibly can, could expand its authority and begin interfering directly with the called activities within religious denominations. I mean, already we have situations where churches and schools have been forced to hire homosexuals and atheists in positions of a non-ministerial nature, such as gardeners and the like. And it's perfectly clear that the government is all set to move into this area as well. I think even in the case of gardeners and people not doing direct religious activity in a church or in a school, those people can have an impact on the entire organization. And therefore, I would say that even in those cases, it's unfortunate that a church doesn't have complete authority over hiring and firing. But all right, that's impossible under the present circumstances. But surely, where anybody is an ordained minister, whether pastoral or educational, that person should be under the aegis of the church body, and the government should back off.
Well, when we come back, more with Dr. John Warrett Montgomery on this legal perspective on the Supreme Court case of the ministerial exception.
How would you like to win the Essential Lutheran Library? Books like Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, Law and Gospel, the Lutheran Service Book, and the Lutheran Book of Prayer, and four more resources. All you have to do is share the Issues Etc. Reformation Week video on your Facebook page and send an email to contest@issuesetc.org. You'll find the video at issuesetc.org and click Support. We'll announce the winner of the Essential Lutheran Library on Friday, October 28th.
Just in time for Reformation Day, Concordia Publishing House has a new graphic novel titled Luther, Echoes of the Hammer. This Luther biography is written and illustrated in a fun, comfortable format. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Or you can purchase Luther, Echoes of the Hammer by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. This new Reformation resource costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. Luther, Echoes of the Hammer, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on the importance of Issues Etc.
This is the best that Christian radio gets. And I know that anyone who listens to this show will get sound biblical doctrine and, most importantly, a complete focus on the cross and on Christ. I've done so many radio shows over 35 years, literally thousands of them, and I know of no other program that puts the cross and the gospel right at the focus of everything.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, issues, etc.
In less than 2 weeks, we're going to start yet another Issues Etc. Reformation Week here on the program. Now, we're going to kick it off talking with Pastor Paul McCain about Lutheranism versus Roman Catholicism, but you can find out all about the rest of the week's program, the great guests and topics for Reformation Week, by going to our website, issuesetc.org, click support. Right there where you usually find our Issues Etc. YouTube videos, you will find that new video, Issues Etc. Reformation Week 2011. Now, what we'd like you to do is share that. It's very easy to do right there from that site or from our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, where you will also find the video. Scroll down just a little bit. You can watch it, then you can share it on your Facebook page. And when you do, send us an email, contest@issuesetc.org. And on October 28th, as we get into Reformation Week here on Issues Etc., we're going to pick one name to receive what's called the Essential Lutheran Library. It is a stack of books, pretty considerable stack of books, almost $500 in regular retail price. We're giving it away to one of the people who shares our Issues Etc. Reformation Week video. Find it at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, or on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about the Supreme Court case, getting a legal perspective on the Supreme Court case being heard now on the ministerial exception. Dr. Montgomery, should it matter to the Supreme Court that this teacher who brings the suit, her call was rescinded not because of any deficiency in her religious duties or teaching, but because of health issues?
Well, I don't think that should make a difference, because if it then becomes the province of the government, province of the state, to determine what are the legitimate grounds for a church dismissing an ordained individual or not dismissing an ordained individual, that means that the government is necessarily enmeshing itself in issues of criteria, and the government should not be in a position even to make such evaluations where the person is a minister, where the person is an ordained person within the denomination. I mean, no one is required to become a clergyman or to become an ordained teacher. And if you are willing to do this, then you do subject yourself to some legal limitations. The legal limitation being that you can't expect the government to deal with employment problems that you have. And if you are bothered by this, if you don't want to have that kind of situation arise, then you simply don't enter into that area. I mean, this is true in any profession. If you become an airline pilot, there are all sorts of restrictions on you that are not on the ordinary person, but you're not obligated to become an airline pilot. In the case of this particular gal, it is most unfortunate that she had these medical problems, but when the school board and the church decided that she was no longer able to fulfill her functions, and that was backed up medically, then they said, sorry, we have to hire a substitute. And then later on, they would have had to get rid of the substitute who was called as well, and that would have been a hideous mess. In these situations, it seems to me that if we're going to err, we ought to err on the side of giving more latitude to the separation of church and state, not restricting it.
How then, let's say for the sake of argument, that the court decides in favor of the school and against the EEOC's case here, how then should there be reasonable guards against what we shall call abuse by churches of this latitude that they're afforded with regard to discrimination on the basis of disabilities or on the basis of anything else? How can there be reasonable safeguards to keep the church from saying, hey, government can't touch our hiring or firing practices, so we can hire and fire for reasons that would be illegal, and not only that, but wrong?
Well, of course, that's theoretically a danger, but within the legal system, there are always exceptions made for egregious and utterly irrational conduct. For example, there are special tax benefits that come to nonprofit organizations. And normally, churches are not audited in the way in which secular organizations are. But when reports come to the tax authorities that the money that is being contributed to a religious organization is going to the fat cat evangelist, you know, there were these awful cases some years ago where the evangelists were just siphoning off the money, then it's possible to come in and use ordinary criminal law to deal with the whole thing. And by that same token, if a church is supposedly dealing with ministerial candidates by itself without interference, and it is reported that the church is, what, firing everybody with red hair or something of this kind, that sort of thing would go to the courts anyway. So there are protections against egregious and arbitrary conduct that are part of the general law that act as protections. And it seems to me that we therefore would not have to worry greatly about problems of the sort you're suggesting.
With about a minute and a half, I do have another final question for you, but with about a minute and a half, summarize how the court could decide in this case. What are the options laid before the court?
Well, the court could simply rule in favor of the church or rule in favor of the teacher. And if they rule in favor of the church, then that certainly is going to mean that the government will back off of instances like this and will leave it up to the church bodies to make decisions in regard to ordained ministerial personnel. On the other hand, if the ruling is for the teacher, then this is going to be an open sesame for the government to deal with questions of this sort, and really there will be no distinction made whatever between secular personnel and religious personnel within church organizations. The government will feel that it can enter into the situation there without any difficulty whatever. It's also possible, of course, for the court to rule narrowly on a case like this and to say that the court is not saying anything with regard to ordained personnel as such, but the court is saying that in this particular instance, the ruling of the congregation was based not on religious considerations at all, but on other considerations, and therefore she should win. If that's the result, then the unfortunate thing is that in future cases, people will be looking very closely on the church's reasons for dismissal or hiring, and I think that even that, as I've already said, would mean that the government would be entering into a religious realm, distinguishing between religious and non-religious reasoning, that sort of thing, and I think that that would be highly dangerous.
Finally, then, with about 30 seconds, respond to the argument that religious institutions shouldn't be exempt from civil rights and employment laws.
Well, the only argument in favor of exempting them is that religion has such a positive impact on the society. It does so much good in terms of eleemosynary activity that special exceptions are needed. And in the case of religion, since this ought to be a free activity, untrammeled by the state in terms of the First Amendment, we've got to be particularly careful that religious activities are protected, because the tendency is, of course, for government always to engage in more government. And therefore, where religious matters are concerned, this can be especially dangerous. And from a Christian standpoint, you know, what we need to have is the free preaching of the gospel, the untrammeled preaching of the gospel. And therefore, if we as Christians deal with issues like this, it seems to me we always ought to be on the side of greater freedom rather than greater restriction.
Dr. Montgomery, before we let you go, tell us about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights that's held annually in Strasbourg, France.
Well, the program for this next summer in July is already on our website, www.apologeticsacademy.eu, and we have a third of the entire group already constituted. We can take only 20 people each summer, and there are 7 people already signed up for the program, and we encourage the listeners to Issues, etc., to make a quick decision on this for 2012. We have a wonderful program. It's the only Institute of Advanced Studies in Apologetics anywhere in the world. Craig Parton is teaching on it. I'm teaching on it. Chad Meissner is teaching on it from Bethel Seminary, and so is Dr. Oliver Wilder Smith, who is both an MD and a PhD dealing with questions of medical ethics and apologetics. This is taking place in the French Rhineland, the two middle weeks of July. Program has been on for 15 years, and it has been honed like a fine watch, and it's a perfectly wonderful opportunity to grow in your ability to present the gospel and defend it, and also to have a wonderful cultural experience. We encourage people on Issues, etc., because they're on our wavelength, to consider seriously taking the program.
You can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy and Christian Thought at Patrick Henry College, and he's authored and edited more than 50 books, including his Tractatus Logico Theologicus. Dr. Montgomery, thanks for being our guest.
You're very welcome.
Well, when we come back, we're going to round off today's Issues, etc., talking about social activism in the black church. What is the risk that the black church or any church takes when it allows itself to be defined by a social agenda or an ethnicity? We'll answer that question with Pastor Ken Jones of the White Horse Inn after this. Issues, etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues, etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues, etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are 4 levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues, etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.